Welcome back to Cambro Conversations with your host, Colin Campbell. And today is episode 219 of the podcast. And as is tradition and pattern, every 10 episodes ending in a 9, I'm recording a solo Q&A with questions sent in over Instagram and my email list. There's a lot of questions to get through, and these include my thoughts on selling my crypto, when I've last felt proud, when I've last felt embarrassed, my biggest takeaway from the Chris Williamson live show in Manchester, 2024 targets, how to improve public speaking and sales ability, and much, much more. Today's podcast is sponsored and supported by my podcast masterclass. Yes, it's my course that I've released. You don't want to start a podcast. Millions of people start a podcast every single year. 90% of them don't even go beyond episode 3, and a further 9% quit after 20 episodes. So I'm not going to sugarcoat this. It is a big commitment, but so are most of the most rewarding things in life. That's the price of entry into areas of life where big wins really, truly happen, and podcast is one of those areas. What I've done with my podcast masterclass is ensure that all your commitment in terms of time and energy has a measurable and tangible return on investment. Because I had to figure everything out for myself during the last 3 years, I wasted so much time, so much energy on pointless tasks and some of the things that didn't really move things forward in terms of strategies. So you don't have to do the same. I've eliminated those lessons for you. And over the last 3 years, I've managed to distill down those lessons into an experience that you can take forward. It is a 9-module video course across, I think, 54 different short videos. And I cover all the nuts and bolts of equipment, technology, software, platforms, and all that kind of stuff. And once that's out the way, we get into the things that are really going to set you apart as a podcast host, that are going to allow you to start, scale, and sustain it. So I'll teach you about guest management and walk you through how to get the attention of big names, nurture them, and get them into engaging guests, the templates that I use for outreach on multiple platforms, and even the communication tools that I've used to land my biggest guests. We then move on to the preparation module, and this is something that I think is so important when I speak to aspiring hosts about what they're nervous about, and I can give you the frameworks, the research tools, and also some of the question styles that can help you to be the best possible host. The link to get enrolled will be in the show notes, and it's www.mypodcastmasterclass.thinkific.com. If that changes, it will change in the show notes as well, so you can click through to that. The podcast is just about to go on tour to Dubai, and at the time of listening, I will have been there for around about a week. And that's only possible with the support of people like you sharing episodes with other people like you and growing the audience to the extent that it has gotten to. So please do make sure you hit that subscribe button. And if you're enjoying this one or one of the ones you've listened to recently, copy and paste that link to a friend. And as we're getting towards Christmas, I want to get into that giving spirit. And I'm going to do a little bit of a giveaway with the Clear Whey from one of my sponsors, MyProtein. So if you are interested in getting your hands on, I think it's a pineapple Clear Whey, then if you screenshot this episode and share it to your story and tag me at call.cambro, if you're a private account, send it to me as a DM so I can see this happened, and I will be picking one lucky winner. You must be based in the UK, and I'll get it posted out to you before Christmas. I will give you about a week to get it posted up. So tag me, put it on your story, shout out the podcast, and I will pick one lucky winner who shares it to their story to win a box of the Clear Whey. Thank you so much for your support. The music's going to play, and you've got about an hour with myself answering your interesting questions. We are back. It is a solo Q&A, and I have 26 questions to get through. And then I'm going to be charging off to the airport to fly to Dubai for a mixture of holiday, podcasting, training, a little tiny bit of partying, and we'll see what else I get up to when I'm out there. Question number one, what are some of the best daily questions to ask yourself for introspection? I like to question myself on a daily basis through my journal, but I also have self-talk, like all of us have, in terms of little questions that we ask ourselves and consider on a regular basis. And I think that's a really important part of staying on track for where I want to go to. So I'll just list some off just now. And if you want to write these down, then feel free to and see how you get on with them. Some will resonate with you, some won't. Am I acting in alignment with who I say I am? Do my habits and actions reflect my identity that I've set out? Am I looking after my mind and body? What activities make me feel happiest? How and why can I do more of them? What will I thank myself tomorrow for doing today? What am I grateful for, including who? What have I learned about today and explored? What could I improve on within my control? Those questions definitely help me to consider Has that day gone well? And has it put me in a position that I want to be in the future? Question number two, new listener, after the sales course you delivered for my cohort of founders, your list of guests is incredible. How do you source your guests? I've been doing a lot more sales consultancy recently alongside outside of my day job working hours, and it's been really cool to get into that with a lot of different people, and I feel like I've got a lot of value to give in that space, and I've got a number of new listeners from it, which has been really, really cool as well. Interestingly, a lot of what I teach within those courses are how I source guests as well, because it's much like sourcing and contacting new clients and prospects for your business and the services and products you want to speak to them about. It's very much like speaking to them about coming on a podcast. This is something that I've actually included as a lesson and module within the podcast masterclass course, but of course, I'll share some of that with you just now. The main sources that I'm getting guests from are authors and bloggers who write in depth on the topics that I want to speak about and interview people on the podcast, online creators that are creating videos or other podcasts within my niche, and also guests that I've heard speak well that I want to delve into deeper with. I've maybe heard them on another show and I'll reach out to them. That's probably some of the main ways that I source guests. There's a few other ways, but I'm going to keep those secret for now, unless of course you want to scale your and start your own podcast and you can get into my masterclass. Number three, what would you do if you never found podcasting? I think I'd certainly regret it, but I would have found another creative outlet that I could spend my time on, whether that would be writing more on Twitter or really building up my email list or starting a Substack. I absolutely love some of the people I've got on Substack, like Rob Henderson, who's been on the show, Dr. Julie Gurner. They write really, really well, and they don't have their own podcast, but they appear as guests on podcasts. Podcasting was just the platform I gravitated towards because my initial skill set from my day job was speaking to people, asking questions, pushing them towards answers that I was interested in finding out about. And I knew I was capable of also improving on that initial skill set. It wasn't something that was hyper polished. It was good, but I knew I could improve on that. So that was like a great process for me to go through. But if I hadn't found podcasting, I would be assigning the energy that I'm giving this elsewhere. I wouldn't just be doing more mundane, time-filling, time-passing activities. That's just not me. Question number four, are modern men soft? I think sometimes these are like designed to not trap me, but to get me to say something really, really hard-hitting. And I'll give you some of that if that's what you're after. I think in many ways, modern men are soft because we haven't had a legacy war or event that defines our generation. If you think about Iraq, Afghanistan, even like interventions like Kosovo in the early 2000s, these are not defining like a world war. These are wars and they're conflicts and there's death and it's terrible, but it didn't conscribe the entire male population to go and get involved. And that's not something that we want to strive towards either. And I think if you consider what future wars are going to look like, they're going to be technology led, not men on battlefields in the same way. The relative comfort that we have enjoyed over the last period, albeit there's been economic challenges and strife for people to go through, relative comfort and like what poverty looks like nowadays is radically different from what poverty looked like even 15, 20, 30 years ago in terms of what people have access to and consider to be disadvantaged nowadays. Albeit I think a lot of the cost of living period has thrust people more towards that. If you look at what's happened within the UK as well, there's been a wider gap of inequality. But there has been relative comfort and that leads to complacency. Modern men are still capable of acts of valor, of honor, of leadership. And I think that starts at home. That starts with you by leading yourself in what you do, how you act, how you hold yourself and the standards you adhere to. And I hope that we never have another great war or another test, but we're going to be pushed through economic hard times or challenges or psychological burdens like the C-19 period, or even within your family, you'll experience hardship like death or illness or whatever that is. And we have to embrace that some form of hardship because it's all relative to where we've been before. If we're not going to go through a World War III or a huge humanitarian crisis that invokes us all, you're going to be tested within your own relationships and with your own your life as well. And you need to be ready for that. And I always try and caveat answers like this by saying that explaining my version of positive masculinity that I've put forward throughout the last however many hundred episodes of the podcast you've listened to, I actually encourage men to ask for help, and I don't consider that to be soft, because if you are brave enough to speak out, ask for help and seek support, discuss how best to solve your problems, then you take action off the back of that. That is an act of bravery and being courageous. And that is not soft. That's the opposite of soft. However, I will say, wallowing in your own self-pity, self-medicating with drink, drugs, porn, all these vices, that is soft and that is weak. And that is where too many men in society are falling into. So if you are thinking that I'm saying, oh, it's soft to just live a modern life, there's elements of that is the case. But if you are struggling, reaching out, seeking help, and then utilizing the hand up that's been given to you is not soft, and people will respect you for moving forward with that. Question number 5, have you felt proud recently? I've certainly felt accomplished in my sales career. Some of the really significant milestones that I've hit in terms of targets, revenue, managing new and stretching conversations and winning deals that was not expected of me or initially set as a target has been really, really good. And that feels great to be operating at a level that I'm proud of the contribution I'm making to the company that I still work for and the revenue that that means from a personal perspective in terms of commission, bonuses, and salary. I've also delivered a lot more consultancy and training work in that space. And the insights and lessons that I've shared have had an immediate positive impact on the people that have taken part in those courses. And that gives me a lot of validation and it makes me feel proud that I've taken time to build that skill set, but also I can communicate that skill set and enable others to utilize it too. And that's one of the most fulfilling parts of coaching or supporting somebody, when you see somebody take action on things that you've taken years to do and they've just actioned it immediately. And they're like, oh, wow, I can be proud that one, I've got that skill set, but two, I'm able to communicate it and bring others alongside me. Beyond that, I'm certainly proud of the positive impact that the content I create on here has. The podcast has been such an amazing venture, and it's a really long process because I know that it doesn't happen overnight and there's dips and downloads some weeks, and I try not to get too caught up on that. I just focus on the quality, and sometimes you get a message from like an episode from 10 weeks ago, 10 months ago, and you're like, oh wow, that's crazy. Like, that's one person that's been impacted by that. And sometimes you might be like discouraged if an episode has a few hundred or a few thousand less downloads than another one, and you wonder, oh, did I miss the mark there? But then somebody messaged you about it and you're like, wow, okay, it had a really positive impact. And social media has tricked us that like 50 likes on a photo is like a small amount of like engagement. But if 50 people came and paid you a compliment about whatever it was you were doing when they liked that photo, you'd probably be overwhelmed. And that's just the nature of the online world. One interesting thing that I'll say about being proud is that the Spotify Wrapped period is coming up. And at this time of year, it's always really refreshing and a bit of a reminder that my hard work is paying off when I see the show being featured in people's top 5 on Instagram stories or people send it to me direct. And I'm up there with like other household names. I'm like, oh, wow, like I have actually built something that's really meaningful and actually is having a positive impact on the listenership. And I'm looking forward to that. And if I'm in your Spotify Wrapped, please do share it. It means a lot. Question number 4, conversely, have you felt embarrassed recently? I always link embarrassment and shame as two emotions that kind of sit together, which are emotions that I hope not to encounter too often, but I think they're going to come up just by nature of life. And I would also say that embarrassment can link to being shy as well. And being shy is something that I try and avoid, albeit occasionally. Interesting, I was at a networking event a couple of months ago and I did feel a bit shy around some of the people I was around because they just didn't feel like my kind of people, if I'm honest. But that can come up. But I think the most recent example I can think of being a little bit embarrassed, and I do try and be confident and assured, is I asked somebody's name twice and I was still completely unsure of what they said the third time, and I just nodded and I hoped that someone else would just say their name in the next few minutes to help me, because it was embarrassing, because you don't want to be like, what did you say? Oh, so I, like the first time you'd be like, oh, sorry, I didn't catch that. And then they'll say it again and you just have to nod and smile. Like, I think 3 times is like the rudest time. it's not great. Question number 5, what do people get wrong about personal brand? Trying to mimic someone else in their industry who is a success already, trying to be like a copycat version. I've said this before, don't try and be the Aldi or the Costco version of somebody else. It just won't last. Aubrey Marcus has this phrase that's shared on a lot of different podcasts. And I think I first spoke about it on my very first episode with Chris Williamson, and he brought it to the table because he was saying that as his podcast and platform grew, it felt great because he was being himself for the first time, moving away from being the kind of Love Island nightclub running party boy that he wasn't truly. He was now being this explorative, curious podcast host. Aubrey Marcus said, the persona is incapable of receiving praise or love. Because if you're acting as a persona or someone else, anything that you are hyped up for or praised for or lauded for isn't really you, because you're acting as somebody else in the hope that it will emulate some form of their success. You will not feel that praise as deeply than if you were doing something in your own way and received the same positive feedback. If I was playing this different act on the podcast and an episode just absolutely exploded and everyone was like, oh my God, the show's amazing, it wouldn't feel as good as if I just kept doing what I'm doing, interviewing people I want to interview, asking the questions that I want to ask, covering the topics that I want to cover, and hoping that it's of service to the listenership. And it just grows steadily, and I'm feeling that. That feels so much more wholesome and so much better than if I was just optimizing for sensationalist viral content for the sake of it. It's also exhausting being somebody else. So if you're building a personal brand and you're trying to be somebody else or borrow huge traits of theirs, I don't think that's going to last. I think you're going to run into a brick wall. You're going to lose the stimulation and the motivation to keep going. I absolutely think you should borrow ideas and identify traits and styles and ways of working that you like about other creators and build them into your own skill set and sharpen your approach over time and get better and better and better. But do not mimic. That is a recipe for short-term success potentially, but long-term, you're not going to make it. Question number 6, when is your round 2 with Richard Dixon out? It is due to be released on Sunday the 10th of December. I hope you're ready. It's a 2-hour epic. We go very, very deep. And when that goes out, please do smash it onto your Instagram story, because we broke records last time. We were in the top 10 in the UK, I think, for most played on Apple Podcasts that week in my category, which was absolutely wild when you consider that it's a podcast out of the west of Scotland. So thank you for your support on that one when it comes out in advance. Question number 7, what was your biggest takeaway from the Chris Williamson Self-Discovery live show? I had a version of this question 3 times, so it was obviously one that needed to be answered. There was lots of takeaways from the show in Manchester, but one concept I think everyone would benefit from immediately is called the alien eye view. Picture this, an alien comes down to Earth today and watches what you do every day, all day, how you spend your time and how you behave. They would, as an alien, not have a conception of what is societally normal. So they'd be able to cut through any of your words, your intentions, or your stated goals, and they would identify very quickly from how you spend every waking minute what you're actually working towards. Because we tell ourselves lots of stories about the priorities and the aims that we have and what we care about and how important they are to us. But until we detach entirely from all sort of social conventions or traditions and all understanding of like norms and behaviors, we can much more easily assess whether the activities that we're spending our time doing and assigning the most time to are moving us in the direction that we say they are. For example, if an alien saw you scrolling on your phone, watching short videos for 2 hours a day on TikTok, what would they, as somebody who's completely detached from it, learn about your priorities? It'd be pretty hard for them to tell that you're actually somebody that's trying to progress their career or scale a new business. They would rightly say, no, I don't see how that activity aligns with what you say is important, because they would have no idea that that is just what happens nowadays. Everyone is watching short videos on their phone for a portion of their day. And because they aren't on Earth and they aren't captured by those habits and behaviors and routines that we have, the alien can make an assessment much better. So I think I mentioned on the podcast with David McIntosh last week, episode 218, there's like a concept of like helicopter view and like zooming out from above. The alien is like the level up from that, because you just can completely assess what somebody is actually valuing based on what they're doing, and you can see that much more clearly. Question number 8, are you still buying crypto even during this upturn? In short, yeah, I'm still investing in crypto. I think the market going up is very welcome after a very, very challenging couple of years. I'm personally sitting on some cash though, because I feel, and this is not investment advice, that we are due a bit of a shakeout at some point in a dip before we enter a full-blown bull market and a bull run. I'll be a lot more confident that we are fully in the bull market and there's not going to be the same drops, albeit with crypto, there are still shakeouts even during a massive positive run. After the Bitcoin halving in spring 2024, it's due potentially to be around April 2024. After that happens, I will be extremely confident that we're in a bull run and we're going to go up the way. So my time horizons on it are relatively long, not as long as certain stock shares or other asset classes. But with crypto, I think you need to understand the timing of it. Overall, I'm very, very bullish. And my crypto holding is primarily made up, and this is a question that gets asked as well, so I'll answer it anyway. It's made up of Bitcoin, XRP, Borg, which is Sporg, which is the exchange that I'm on's own token. And I have a little bit of Ethereum as well. And I'm extremely confident that all of those will be highly profitable based on the prices that I've been buying in it over the last 3 years, particularly in the last 2 years, in the next 18 to 24 months. Question number 9, what are the benefits of having an established podcast that's often missed and not spoken about, opposed to loads of fanny and clout online? I can't believe I've just said fanny on a podcast, but here we are. It's definitely not censored. I did laugh because I actually don't think a podcast is a massive funnel for dating, particularly as my audience now is like 75 to 80% men. But the network that you build off the back of it is probably the most understated value. Of course, like, you get clout online. I can say I've got a top 1% global podcast, and that's a great flex in some circles potentially. But having an established podcast means that I get access to people that I maybe wouldn't get access to immediately anyway. And even on a local basis, I've made new friends and connections who I spend time with, who I learn from. They push me and I push them. And I just have more people around me that are interested in the same things by nature of being able to have them on with the established podcast. I think I could still achieve that, relatively speaking, in Scotland anyway, with a podcast that's not as established as this one. But your network locally is fantastic. But beyond the local connections and friendships, of course, we have the global network that I've established. And by having an established podcast, you can reach these guests that are a genuine game changer, because I've spoken to the experts on some of the topics I'm the most interested in. And it's forced me to learn and really level up in my preparation work, because the prep that I have to do to have the conversations with like genuine experts, the good quality questions that I want to ask, the kind of anecdotes that I need to have and the understanding I need to have to probe and push a little bit further, that's forcing me to level up on like a weekly basis. And it's a big factor in these solo episodes that happen every 10 being popular, because I've learned so much even since I recorded episode 209, like 6, 7, 8 weeks ago. I've learned lots because I've interviewed really interesting people during that time period, which I've had to upskill for. And so outside of that learning as well, network with these amazing guests is crazy, because I have those guests who've come on my show and they've referred me to other guests in their industry because they've been really impressed by what it is that I'm working on and what I'm doing. They advocate and they support for what I'm building. And I also have access to them at some point. Now, I never try and overstep the mark here or take the piss, but there's a lot of leverage gained from having a guest on their show, on your show, them having a positive experience, them recommending you to somebody, or you knowing that they might be able to recommend you to somebody in the future. And I've got a number of favors or goodwill or whatever that you've built up. So the leverage there is tremendous. And when it comes time to call some of those in, I will be very, very grateful that I built a podcast like this one, because that will count for a lot. Question number 10, you frequently talk about the rat running towards the cheese and that it runs harder when something it's scared of is introduced to the equation. What is Colin Campbell running from? This person should have a podcast. That is a great question. I largely think that I'm running from a fear of not working towards something with purpose. I hate, like genuinely hate, and it makes me, and I'm not an anxious person, but it makes me uneasy if I was just coasting and doing meaningful shit that didn't mean anything to me. I do get restless at the thought of wasting my life and my time. And at times that has meant that I can't really relax, which isn't healthy. But I've been pretty good at building in and planning the downtime and the activities that I feel are quote unquote purposeful relaxation. Because the number of non-negotiable areas that I have in my diary of not working is really, really important, because it's really easy to fill up my time with my sales career, with working on the podcast. Even working on my physique is not really rest, is it? So I feel like not only am I running towards my potential, but I'm running away from not fulfilling that, and I'm running away from a life of mediocrity, unfulfilled ambitions, unfulfilled desires, missed opportunities, and just generally a life of unhappiness. Question number 11, you've mentioned your love for the movie American Psycho. What do you think of the main character, Patrick Bateman? American Psycho is absolutely one of my favorite films. And Bateman himself, I mean, I always thought he was a bit of an icon, but he actually had a massive bump at the start of the lockdown period because he started going viral with different memes and TikToks of him because people were spending even more time on their phones. I think firstly, the reason that Bateman is such an icon is that his style and his appearance is something that many males of my age admire, both his physical appearance in terms of the aesthetics, but also like how he dresses. He's also a consumerist and a materialist, and he's not apologetic about it at all. He's completely unashamedly wanting to wear the best things and do the best things. He's not hiding the fact that he wants the nicest suit, that he wants to have the best restaurant booking, the best table. He's not concerned about talking about the watch he's managed to buy or the business cards that he's managed to improve. It's actually endearing to see that level of disdain and disregard for people who don't understand that he wants to pursue what he wants to do. He doesn't care that you think he's shallow. He doesn't care that you think he's fixated or obsessed with himself. And you can just take it or leave it. And there's a strength to that, albeit, of course, it's at an extreme end of like a character. And that's not to say that my connection with Bateman means that I'm obsessed with materialism. In fact, you'll regularly hear me quote Naval, who says, if you can't be happy with a coffee, you won't be happy on a yacht. However, leaning into and accepting that you have material desires is absolutely fine to use as a driving force. And if you don't like nice things, that's absolutely fine. And like everyone's scale of nice is relative. We all have hedonic adaptation where the car that you've always dreamed of or strived for, you eventually get it. And guess what? In a few months' time, it'll probably just become the car. And that's absolutely okay. But as long as you understand that that's going to happen to you, then that's quite an important thing. The last thing that I'll say about Patrick Bateman is that the relentless and obsessive streak over his habits and his routines absolutely strikes a chord with any gym bro who's ever built but also maintained a physique that's of a really high standard. And I think that's important. The only other thing I would say, and I said that was going to be the last thing, he's also fiercely politically incorrect because he just doesn't care about whatever the new woke narrative is. And I think many males in modern society have built a connection to him because he's an advocate of just doing your own thing, being responsible for your own like own appearance, your own outcomes, and just refuses to conform to new and seemingly never-ending controls and narratives that are being pushed. But let's move on from my Patrick Bateman fanboyism. Question number 12. Looking at doing online fitness coaching, I've been reading lots about creating landing pages for Facebook campaigns, then giving away something of value for free in exchange for an email, then marketing from there. What other methods of lead generation have you used, and what would you suggest to pursue initially? I think a lead magnet of free value is a great way to engage with your potential customer base, because as long as that lead magnet is of sufficient quality and demonstrates your expertise, then that's really valuable to the person because it's starting to prove to them that you might be someone that they would want to work with on a paid basis. So that could be, as an online fitness coach, it could be some sort of guide, it could be a frequently asked questions document, it could be a sample program or a nutrition plan, it could be a breakdown of like a really important concept within your niche, it could be a video explaining like form or something like that, and it starts to demonstrate that you're somebody that is a credible expert that could help them. Other lead generation that is worth thinking about is, of course, your public-facing social media. So the content that you're posting should be building authority, it should be building reputation, it should be showcasing your results and your value and your knowledge and your applicable knowledge in terms of how it would help somebody else. And from there, that should generate some form of inquiry as well. So lead generation, of course, you've got, I would say some form of lead magnet for your email list would be a very, very important thing, but your online social media should reflect that as well. And I know you've just said that you're just starting online coaching or considering it, but client referrals will also generate really good quality leads too. These will be like a really warm lead because the person that's being referred has tangibly seen and understands the result that their friend has achieved, and they'll have a lot more confidence that you'll be able to achieve that for them as well. Appreciate that these initial clients as well may be coached or helped for free or for low cost, because that will prove the concept and then you can refer them on to their friends as well. Question number 13, are you still considering relocating? I think I've spoken on the podcast before about considering some time working in Dubai. And as I said at the very start of this, or at least I will have said in the introduction, which will play on the audio platforms, I think spending winter in Dubai and summer, quote unquote, in very inverted commas because of the nature of what summer's been like in Scotland the last few years, spending that summer in Scotland would be a pretty cool mixture. And it's going to be really interesting when I'm out there for a couple of weeks to see what it's like, because I'm going to log on on a few occasions. I've got a few deals that I'm working on that I'm going to need to be involved for. So it'll be a good stress test to see what that would be like. Equally, I really, really like my life in Scotland. I really like my life in Glasgow. I have a great time. So there's nothing for me to run away from, but it's a case of, is the cheese, to buy in this analogy would be the cheese, is that something I want to strive for in terms of understanding what that would look like? So I'll get a good sample for that. Question number 14 is linked to Dubai as well, and that's, how excited are you for brunches in Dubai and this year's boat party? One of my friends has booked a boat for the first Friday that I'm there, so that'll be good fun as well. I'm very excited for that. I haven't drank since I was in Mallorca in July. I've had absolutely no inclination to do that in the UK whatsoever. I wouldn't get anything from it. I don't think the events that I've been at, I've enjoyed without alcohol. And yeah, I'm very excited to let my hair down a little bit as well. There'll be a few events that I'll be at in Dubai that are like brunches that I probably won't drink at. And then there'll be a few that I will, because the atmosphere will be right for it and the occasion will be heightened by that experience. So yeah, a good mixture of what's coming up in the next couple of weeks for me. Question number 15, I have a genuine fear of rejection in life and work. Any advice to get past that? The short answer is to understand that rejection is part of the process in any domain. You're going to have to face no at some point, whether that's in sales, in dating, in career progression. You're never always going to get a yes. It's just not possible. Like you would have to be somebody of incredible luck and like one in a 10 million to experience a life that's just constant yeses and forward momentum. However, you need to try. If you never ask, then you're going to fail to reach whatever goal you're capable of as well, because you're just getting what comes to you without like any effort. Because for example, if I didn't reach out to some of the brilliant guests I've had on the show, then the podcast would probably have stagnated and it wouldn't really have got anywhere. If I didn't get regular no's or ghosted or ignored in my sales career, then I would never have hit some of the revenue figures that I've achieved this year. Equally, if you're listening to this and you're in a happy relationship, at some point one of you would have had to approach the other and ask them out and face the potential of rejection or the potential of a not now. And that would have stung. So many good things lie on the other side of a potential rejection. And even from a rejection, you can always learn things as well. And I would try and reprogram the self-talk that you've got to understand that the rejection is not always of you. It could be a whole host of factors. It could be the timing was wrong, your product, your service was not the right fit for that individual or that company, your delivery and your approach might have been wrong as well. And you might have just not landed it as in the best possible way. You might not have explained it as well as you possibly could have as well. I'll also say that acknowledging that you have a fear of rejection is a great start. So by you picking that in writing and being brave enough to ask me it, you are acknowledging that it's a potential problem, because then you can start to incrementally lean into experiences where you have a chance of facing that fear and overcoming it as well. Because you also need to realize that experiencing that feeling of pushing past it will start to prove to yourself that there are occasions when you can overcome it and come back from it. It's not going to shatter your entire world by getting a no. Don't get me wrong, asking the girl out or the guy that you really like and getting a no, that's going to hurt, but it's not forever. It's not permanent. It's a really old episode now, somewhere around 45, I think, with a gentleman called Dr. Aziz, where we talked about confidence, and he was speaking about exposure therapy. And when you build more confidence, you're much more assured to face rejection, because you realize that it's not permanent. So if you're really interested in confidence and rejection, that might be an episode to go back and listen to. In terms of actions for you and advice to really get past this, you're going to have to ramp it up bit by bit. You're going to have to expose yourself to it. Try little things. Even if you've got particular fear of rejection in work or in life, whatever one is more severe, face it in the other area first and give yourself some sort of proof and accept the no's. Interestingly, you can sometimes chase more no's just to see how you feel. Spencer Lodge was on the show during the summer, and he said in his first few weeks in a sales job, he was actively told by his manager, chase 200 no's a day, 200. And then slowly to up that number of yeses each day and start to convert more and more and more. But still, as a salesperson, he recognized that the vast majority of the 200 calls and the 200 approaches he was going to make were still going to say no. Even when he got really, really good, he was still getting more no's than yeses. And there's a lesson in there for all of us. Question number 16, is it hard to manage time when researching upcoming guests? How much time does it take? it is definitely hard to manage that. But I've spoken, I think, on the last solo episode, which was a 13 thoughts at 31, I spoke about bundling. I bundle up my walks, some of my gym sessions, my drives, listening to guests that are coming up on any previous interviews they've done. And I really assign a lot of time to reading their content as well, whether that's their website, their blog, their Twitter, their Substack, all sorts of areas. I would say on average, in terms of the time it takes to prep for a guest, if I know their subject or I know that individual quite well beforehand, I would probably say 3 to 4 hours. If I don't know them and I don't know their subject as well, or there's somebody that I'm like intellectually really, really striving to get to their level and like be on a par with, or at least able to have a really coherent conversation, 5 to 6 hours. So there's a huge time commitment for the level of research that I do. And hopefully you've noticed guests be taken aback sometimes when I bring up something that they like, oh, I didn't know you would know that. And then they share more off the back of it as well. And that's something that I've spoken about in the podcast masterclass. You earn the right to ask deeper questions by knowing at least a little bit more than the guest expects you to know about them as well. Question number 17, does legacy matter to you? What would yours be if it does? I think legacy is an interesting concept. I think Alex and Moses was speaking a lot about this, that nobody's going to remember you when you're dead, or at least not like a generation or two after you're gone. And I think that's a bit of a morbid thought, it's a bit nihilistic, and I do understand that. I think I would like to leave a positive impact and legacy on the people that do remember me when I'm gone, albeit that might be by the time my grandchildren or my great grandchildren are there, that'll start to fade. But the people that are directly left after you, I think they should definitely feel a legacy of financial security and support that you provided. But in terms of like how I would want to be remembered in terms of a legacy, it would be somebody who set their own standards and lived by those and helped and supported and enabled others around him to achieve their goals and ambitions as well. That rising tide raises all ships is something that I talk about lots of the time as well. And I would like to be that for myself and for those that spend time with me. And ultimately that I led a life that was in alignment with the values that I speak about and that I hold personally. Because you want to be somebody that was like a man of their word, somebody that said what they were going to do and did it. And those were their true beliefs and their true actions, and they weren't a yes man or a fraud or somebody that wasn't their true self. Question number 18, I love your solos. How much prep do you need for them versus a pod with a guest you've never met before? Interesting, there's a couple of questions now about prepping for podcasts. 3 to 4 hours, I was saying, is like pretty standard for a guest that's coming on the show. In terms of the solos, I obviously have to collate all the questions from Instagram and my email list. I have to filter through them. I've picked 26, something like that for today. And I've got a few notes that I've just made sure that I'm covering for particular questions where it's maybe a little bit more detailed. I would say the prep time for that is probably around an hour and a half, 2 hours. And then of course you've got the hour recording. So there's less prep time for a solo episode, unless it's like a special, like the 13 thoughts at 31 or the 30 thoughts at 30 I did the year before. That was probably more prep than a solo podcast episode like this one. Albeit there's a few answers, and there's one coming up very, very soon where I actually had to make sure that I had detailed notes to give you as much value as possible from the information. Ultimately, I'll break the wall with you here. Recording the solos is really funny. They actually get really, really high plays. I've mentioned that before. You guys seem to love them. It builds a great connection and we start to understand each other more than just when you hear me interviewing people. But because there's not a time slot in the diary, sometimes it takes me ages to actually record them, which is really bad. Because if I know I'm recording at 7 o'clock with Sahil Bloom, or I'm recording at 5 o'clock with David McIntosh, that is happening. It has to happen. Whereas with the solo, I just need to know I've got like an hour and a bit to sit down and record it, or stand up and record it, as is the case more often than not, which is a funny one. But we're getting it done and I'm sure you'll enjoy this episode. Question number 19, you come across as a very happy guy. What do you do to raise your mood when you're not happy? I think the mind follows the body, and often what I've done the day before will indicate how I'm going to feel the day afterwards. I mentioned the Chris Williamson live show. One of the concepts that he spoke about that he actually developed with Jimmy Carr, the comedian of all people, who is a real self-development junkie and nut, and really, 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 really good, interesting character, and somebody I'd love to speak to at some point. He spoke about the concept of the 24-hour you, and a lot of the time what you've done the day before is going to reflect how you feel the day afterwards. So doing what you can within those 24 hours to feel good the day afterwards is really, really important. So if I think about my habits that give me like a baseline level of happiness, it's nailing my sleep, it's nailing my nutrition, nailing my training. I feel great when those things are happening. I would probably add within training, like walking as well. I really feel good after my walks. Alongside that, what I consume matters. And I've mentioned nutrition, that's your diet and what goes in your mouth. But what goes in my ears and my eyes is so, so important as well. And if I am not in a good mood, I need to listen to things or watch things that are going to support me as well. And I'm also going to have conversations with people that stimulate me as well. If, for example, I have we mentioned rejection, if I lose a proposal in work and actually we as a company and me, I take responsibility, we lost a proposal that would have been worth about 1.2 million in revenue. So pretty significant. A couple of weeks ago, and I was really disappointed in that. But I spoke to people afterwards that I knew, quote unquote, got it and understood what it's like to be in that sort of situation and experience that. Whereas if I'd spoken to other people that just mope and moan and wallow in their own pity, I might have ended up in that sort of situation as well. So if I come across a happy guy, I appreciate that. I am a happy guy. I have a pretty high baseline. But when I'm not happy, I do not accentuate that feeling by listening to sad music or talking to sad people. I just detach from it and I start consuming the stuff that I want to consume. I start training, I start walking, I escape and I change environment and I push forward in the best possible way. Question number 20, and this is one that I had to prepare for. What tips would you give to improve public speaking and becoming more of a presence? So I'd given a presentation recently to two founders that were going to be pitching for investment, and they were nervous about getting their points across and just speaking in a way that was really understandable. And of course they've heard me on here, so they were keen to gather my skills from that. And I shared 5 points with them that was the nucleus of the training session that we had. And number one was speak at a moderate pace. Speaking too quickly can not only one be difficult for listeners to understand you, but also when you speak too slowly, you sound uncertain. Having clarity into your speech in terms of rhythm and pacing is really, really important. So find a comfortable pace that works for you, that helps you to be understood more easily, but also it invokes confidence and shows that you know what you're talking about too. Point number two was focus on clarity and pronunciation. So making sure that any words that you're saying them correctly and clearly, and that you're not trying to be too regional with the words you're using as well, because you might isolate people alongside that. I would also caveat that when you use technical or industry specific terms, say them correctly, but don't use too many abbreviations within your speech too, because people will really struggle with that. Number three was use proper volume. So of course you're going to be trying to speak at a moderate pace that shows confidence and shows that you're sure of yourself, but also understand that your volume is appropriate for the situation environment as well. So if it's a Zoom call, it's a little bit easier because everyone's in the same sort of space. But if you're in a noisy room and it's like a public speech that you're standing up for, you need to speak louder so that you can be heard. Make sure any equipment or mics that you're using are working properly as well. And alongside that, I also try and this is number four, use appropriate inflection. And inflection is just regarding your tone and your pitch. So when it comes to speaking about something more important, you might heighten your tone, heighten your pitch to emphasize the importance of that point, and that will also keep the listener engaged as well. One thing to remember when you're speaking to people, mostly remember the start and the end. So have your emphasis and your tone and what you're talking about really register at those points as well. Alongside that, you can also lower your tone and draw people into you, and then raise your tone for questions to the audience as well. So it might be something like, how do you become more of a presence? Which was question number 20 on that. Whereas when I'm answering and I'll be like, to become more of a presence, you really need to focus on being a clear, moderate paced, loud and communicative speaker. Okay, there we go. Number five, practice and self-monitor. Now this is the hardest and most unpleasant one, and you should have seen one of the founder's faces when I told him he was gonna have to film himself. But the best way to improve your clarity of speech is through practice and repetitions. Record yourself speaking and listen or watch the playback to identify areas that need improvement. And you will identify lots of areas to start with. You'll probably be a little bit uncomfortable with it as well. But with time and practice, you'll probably start to buff off some of those edges which you know need immediate improvement, and you'll be able to make noticeable, tangible improvements. I would say within 3 or 4 times of recording yourself, you will be notably different. And when you watch it back, you'll be a lot more comfortable with how you get on. Question number 21, what's your long-term career goals and plans? Do you want to own your own business? Do you want to work in corporate? Do you want to live off XRP when it goes to $589? I mean, if XRP could go to $589, that would be very, very interesting. But I think I've said this before, even if I became financially free, I would probably still be working in some capacity because I wouldn't want my mind or my body to go soft. I wouldn't enjoy that. But my long-term career plans and actions, as long as I'm working in an area that I care about, that I feel I've got a skill set that I'm good at the moment and giving a positive feedback loop and allows me to develop and stretch myself on a regular basis, that's going to be so, so important. Is that corporate? Is that my own business? Is that living off XRP and doing something that's really niche and isn't entirely financially motivated? Maybe. So we'll find out. I certainly think if we're looking in the medium term, I want to keep progressing within my role as a sales director. I want to grow the revenue I'm responsible for, that I'm bringing in, the size of the deals that I'm working on, the types of customers that I'm able to bring in for the business, which is brand new. That's going to be really, really important to me. And then alongside that, I want to build up some of the offerings that I make through this podcast and through other areas as well, which will allow revenue streams, which will give me ultimate freedom of choice as well. And for example, I've launched the podcast masterclass, and I think that's going to put me in a great position for potentially helping people grow their own podcast and start their own podcast. And of course, that's going to raise some revenue that I can reinvest back into the podcast or reinvest into my lifestyle, whatever comes first. But I suspect it's going to see me reinvest into the podcast, as you know me. But alongside that, I need to offer something that's not quite as niche, because launching a podcast is a niche thing. The vast majority of people listening to this will not want to launch a podcast. But if you do want to launch a podcast, I've got something that's one, valuable, one, actionable, and two, at a cost point, which is pretty reasonable. But if you're wanting something more broadly in terms of help with whether it's public speaking or sales skills or self-development or mindfulness or mindset, then I can definitely help with that as well. And I need to build those products and services out to support people, because that's areas that I can add value. And of course, that would give me more options and more choice about what I might want to do in the future. And it's interesting, question number 22 is linked to this. If you could match your corporate salary through podcasting, would you do it full time? If I could match my corporate salary for the year 2023 through podcasting, yes, I would do it full time, because I would be able to do more podcasts and it would grow faster. It would have more of an impact. I'd be able to spend more time in Dubai or London or Austin or wherever it would require in order for me to record more. And I would have 40 to 50 hours a week to invest fully into the podcast. Like, I think one of the things I'll just say, and people will probably smile at this, look what I've done working like 7 till 9 a.m. and like 6 p.m. till 9 p.m. on a podcast. Imagine what I would do if I was working 9 till 5 on a podcast, or even more than that. It would be fucking tremendous, I'll tell you that much. So yeah, of course I would. Question number 23, who do you think is the best podcaster for their interview style and skills? Everyone should always call out and pay homage to somebody like Joe Rogan, who is tremendously curious. He's insightful. He asks the question that the audience want him to ask a lot of the time, while of course actually knowing some of the answers so that he can then hold his own and push back and probe or delve deeper with the guest off the back of it. And I'll always mention Chris Williamson as well, who I think is a brilliant role model. Because I was listening to Chris's show and got acquainted with him before it was absolutely the behemoth that it is now, I was able to learn lots and lots and lots about what good looked like. Even he was almost like doing it in the shadows. And now what people are getting to enjoy is the skill set he's cultivated elsewhere. And again, like I said, when it comes to building a personal brand, there's no interviewer that I'm trying to mimic their exact style, because you can only be the best version of you. You can't be the Aldi version or the light version or the diet version of somebody else. So those are two that I think are really, really good at what they do. They're well-researched, they're well-spoken, they're clear. They also use much more humor than me. Chris has actually had to work on that. He got a comedy coach to help him with that. He did some improv as well, whereas Joe Rogan comes from a comedy background, so he's really funny as well. So I think from an entertainment standpoint, they're probably really, really strong at that. And that's something that I look up to and I admire. I can be quite dry in my sense of humor and I can be quite like punny or whatever, but that's maybe an area for me to work on too. Question number 4, how do you determine how much to charge for products? What was your process for your course? Interesting question. How much to charge for your products? Varying concepts here. So number 1, how much will the market bear? Like, what is the value of it? And what do people typically pay for something in that space? And how does your product compare to that? Is your product better? Then charge more. Is your product more premium? Charge more. Is your product an entry-level product and not as good as some of the market standard? Then you're probably going to have to charge less. I mentioned like somebody starting online coaching. If you've got no track record in there, you're probably going to have to not charge very much because you've got no reason or no basis to do that. For the podcast masterclass, I chose to charge what I charge, which I think is starting at 257, but it's going to go to 307 after, maybe after this comes out, actually. It might have already gone up, but wait and see. That was based on, one, what I saw within the market, the fact that my course was more detailed and produced in higher quality and hosted on a platform that had more video bandwidth and more opportunity for me to upload templates and frameworks for people. So I was able to charge more than what I saw elsewhere in the market. I also knew that the pain of failing with a podcast is quite high. Like, even if you're going to start one, your costs for like doing like 10 episodes is pretty similar to doing 50, albeit unless you're using a studio on a regular basis. But if you're buying the equipment to record from home, you're going to spend the same amount on hosting platforms and mics and webcams and any editing software that you would spend producing lots and lots and lots. So the opportunity cost is really, really high when it comes to these things. So by investing in a course for like 300 quid, you're negating a lot of the chances of that failing and a lot of that chance of that falling over. You're going to have a lot more clarity in your processes and your frameworks. So I think that's largely where the cost came from. I figured out that people fail at this lots. They should be willing to spend 300 quid in order to be a success at this or give themselves the best possible chance of being a success. So yeah, I think looking at the market, seeing how yours compares, understanding how much of a problem you solve. So for example, you can charge a lot less for a podcast course than you could charge for maybe somebody like getting investment advice. So say you're a financial planner, you should be charging a lot more for your service because fiscally that has a much bigger material impact on somebody's life than starting a podcast. Equally, if you are a fitness coach, you should know your value based on how important the transformation is and also who your demographic of, or who are paying for this as well. I was recently speaking at a Factory Weights Business Hub event in Glasgow, and one of the conversations was with Phil Lerny, the PT coach, and he was saying that different cities that you're in will dictate the price you charge. So he was working in Mayfair in London, charging £250 an hour. You couldn't charge £250 an hour in Glasgow. Well, maybe you could, but you'd have a very small number of potential clientele who could potentially afford that or would be interested in paying that. So assess that part of things as well. Question number 25, what's the most important issue facing young men in the modern era? Interesting question to almost wrap up on. I think the most important issue facing young men in the modern era is distraction. We are easily distracted by vices like drink, drugs, porn, Netflix, and I'm not grouping Netflix in specifically with that, but like basically things that are designed to distract us and to use our time. That is a big issue, because if you just constantly chase stimulation or distraction from the things that really, really matter, and don't get me wrong, having a drink on the weekend and partying or watching a series is not always a bad thing at all, but if you're constantly doing it to sedate yourself from the challenges or the mountains that you want to climb in your life, then I think that is a massive issue, because it's so seductive. It's so seductive. You could live this autopilot, mundane, heavily distracted life from the age of 18, and you might wake up one day, you're fucking 32, you're in a job you don't like, you're overweight, you're in a relationship you hate, you're probably going to get divorced. Like, that is, you've got less than £1,000 in the bank. You're the average male in their 30s in the UK or in the US, and it's tragic. So that is a really important issue, to refuse distraction, to push back against that, and to live in alignment with your values and pursue yourself. The vast majority of people listening to this, yes, we'll all go through slumps, but by opting to listen to a podcast like this one or some of the other ones in the archive, you are opting out of coasting along and distracting yourself on a regular basis. You might be listening to this as a pleasant distraction from whatever's going on, and then using the things that we've talked about off the back of this to go and do great things or go and do things that are more important to you. But I think one of the biggest issues facing modern men is the level of distraction that we face and that we can pull ourselves into that is not going to move us where we really want to go. And interestingly, where we want to go is question 26, which is on goals and targets for 2024. I struggle with really concrete targets, and I'm going to work with a couple of people on this for 2024. So these haven't fully been mapped out yet. But what I will tell you is I will be operating in fields like my sales career, like the podcast, like my sales consultancy, like my podcast training, and potentially a couple of other courses and services that I can launch, which will support people with wider goals than just launching a podcast. Those will be my targets to have that. So one target will definitely be to have another course or service that can support people on a more broad basis and work with me to really level up. I think that's going to be important. I want to keep growing the podcast. It's in the top 1%. That's really cool. But let's have more compelling, fantastic conversations and have at least one episode every single Sunday that has a positive impact and helps to move the show in the right direction. And listeners want to share it. Listeners want to action what they've learned within that. That's really important. Physically, I'm going to be doing a little bit more boxing. I'm doing one a week, one session a week. I'll try and put that to two because I've realized I'm very much at the natural limit with my muscular physique in terms of my hypertrophy and my strength training. And while those sessions are still really important for my enjoyment and my mental health and how I feel, it's time to continue to become more physically capable rather than just looking physically capable. So that's going to be important as well. And then beyond that, I definitely want to continue spending time around the people that fill me up the most and give me the most support, fulfillment, and energy. And that might mean from a friendship, but also a dating perspective as well. So that's going to be important too. But 2024, more of the same. More of the same good stuff. More pushing myself, more pushing forward, more bringing others along with me and really doing the things that really matter. But that is a wrap for this solo Q&A. That'll be the last solo Q&A of 2023. And I am so grateful for all your support. If it is round about that Spotify Wrapped time, I better be seeing you guys tagging me on your stories and showing your support for the show. It cannot keep growing without people like you sharing it with other people like you. I appreciate the hell out of you. Thank you so much. And I'll be back to speak to you all again very, very soon.